Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You. Today I have a very, very accomplished millennial who is not just a professional but an entrepreneur as well. Nikhil Garg, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me here.
Nikhil is a consultant with BCG, the Boston Consulting Group. He's also the co-founder of Wonder Learning in the UK. He studied at McGill, London Business School, and of course in early days he was in Indonesia and Amsterdam. So Nikhil, tell me a little bit about your early days and how you led up to your MBA.
So I've been privileged that my father had a job that took us to many countries. We first started off in Indonesia, and Indonesia, as you've also been to before, you tend to get spoiled. You have a lot of luxuries there. My father was an expat, and you had a lot of the expat life that you would live. But the real changer for me was when we moved to the Netherlands. Okay. There'd be situations where I'd come home from school, mom would be there, and she'd say, "Okay, Nikhil, it's time to go to the grocery store." Mm-hmm. And I'd say, "I have to go to the grocery store? Mm-hmm. I have to go on my bike and get that?" Mm-hmm. And then the truly formidable change was when I went to boarding school. Mm-hmm. So parents again moved towards Nigeria. And that's where I felt I really grew as a person. Mm-hmm. I had to make independent choices. I had to become independent. I had to also try to focus on my studies as well as not only on my friends and my social life. Mm-hmm. And that really taught me how to prioritize. Mm-hmm. And continuing on from there, I realized as well that I tend to get bored of a place very quickly. Mm-hmm. I wanted to explore new countries, and I wanted to go to North America. And that's primarily why I chose to go to McGill. They had a great program in economics and finance. I studied that for 4 years. And then again, I felt this urge to come back to Southeast Asia. That's where I had my formidable years. That's where family was as well. Unfortunately, my father also passed away during this time. And for me, a priority was also coming back to family. I'd say that's probably a second defining moment for me, which really told me as well that there's a bigger picture to this, right? And it's not just the small things.
Correct.
It's what do you want to prioritize again? And that for me was family as well as an emerging market.
Correct.
It's a huge growing market that I wanted to be part of. Mm-hmm. And that sort of led me towards Singapore and Malaysia, where I did a lot of projects with BCG. And then again, that's when after 3 years, I said, it's time for me to grow further. I did my MBA at LBS, did that for 2 years, reflected a lot in terms of what I wanted to do. Realized that entrepreneurship is something that excites me. I wanted to try start my own business, and that's where Wonder Learning had started.
So I'm going to come back to Wonder Learning, but let's stay with, when you can move back to Southeast Asia and you joined BCG.
Yes.
So my first question is that what made you choose consulting?
So like I would say any typical millennial, mm-hmm. I came out of undergraduate not knowing what I wanted to do. I had done a lot of economics and finance. Part of me at first thought maybe I should join the World Bank, maybe I should have some sort of economics role. And then I tried an internship in consulting, and I loved it. I thought it was a great way for me to get exposed to many different types of industries, many different types of clients and companies, really sort of hone in on what will make me tick, what drives me. And that's the experience I got at BCG. Mm-hmm. And still I'm getting that experience.
Wonderful.
So in short, it allowed me to explore different industries, different types of companies. And it's also made me realize that I really like consumer goods and retail.
Okay. And then you decided to go to do your MBA. So my question to you is, what was the value add you got from an MBA?
Yeah.
And how important or relevant is it to do an MBA?
So I think it's very important, especially in today's world where you're constantly bombarded and have the thought of the grass is always greener on the other side. The MBA allowed me to take the time to reflect. It allowed me to try different things. For example, entrepreneurship. For example, working in a startup. And just, I don't think I've ever gotten that time, especially in a fast pace like BCG, to just sit on my couch for a week and just reflect. Think about, okay, what do I really want to do? What makes me happy? And I think in your day-to-day work, you just are constantly at BAU, that you never get that time to reflect. So I think that's...
What is BAU?
Business as usual. Okay. As in, you're just constantly working as a status quo.
You forget that I'm much older than I am.
And so, I would say that's the first part. It allows me to reflect, gives me the time to experiment. And then it also just broadens your network. You start to meet people outside of the bubble that you live in terms of consulting, in terms of your family, and really start to meet people who are doctors, who have started their own businesses, who have been in the army, who have been working in all sorts of industries, and you hear their stories in the classroom, and you just get a very different perspective to what you would have never really thought is out there.
Very interesting.
So I'd say those are the main sort of
very interesting
value adds.
And then Nikhil, after your MBA, you chose to go back to BCG. And I'll come to your entrepreneurial stint in a while. You went back, obviously BCG has been good for you.
Yes. No, they have. They're a fantastic firm to work with. A lot of me realize as well that I want to move back to Southeast Asia. I don't think my consulting career is over as yet. I still want to experiment and try new things. And that's why I wanted to go back. It's really rebuilding that network that's back there. It's again going back and really getting a industry specific knowledge in terms of consumer goods and retail. I want to be consumer facing, and that's how I really, as your show is, build that brand. And that's why I think going back to BCG is something that I want to do right now.
Wonderful. So tell me, you know, you have you mentioned that branding retail is something that you're really interested in. And you are a millennial, very good with technology. How is technology changing the industries that you like?
Yeah, so I look at it first in terms of consulting and then also in terms of consumer goods and retail. First, consulting-wise, it's consulting companies are no longer just strategy-based. They're trying to get vertically integrated to offer implementation solutions as well. So that means you'll see a lot of companies buying startups and companies that can build digital products for you, that can implement IT solutions, that can do all your sales and marketing, implement CRM tools, etc. So you'll start to see companies in the consulting side acquiring the knowledge and expertise to try and offer these to their clients. In the consumer goods and retail space, I see a huge trend, especially in FMCG, for direct-to-consumer.
Okay.
It's bypassing the whole retail segment on products that you don't really need to go to a grocery store for. So think about Dollar Shave Club as a great example. They completely disrupted Gillette's model by going directly to the consumer. And I see that happening as a sort of shift in terms of how companies need to adapt. I think there's a whole offline-online channel presence as well that they're no longer two separate worlds.
Correct.
Everything is combining into one. Correct. Where consumers are sometimes, they may browse and shop for the best price online, but they may go to the store to actually purchase. So how do you actually deliver that connected experience, both online and offline, in a very seamless way? That maybe a store manager knows that, hey, you actually looked at this online. I know your profile. Maybe I can just show you the products that matter to you. Because customers, I believe, really want that connected, seamless experience that says, okay, this company knows everything about me and can offer me that tailored solution.
Very interesting. So then let me, you know, use that as a segue to the next question, staying with retail, consumer-facing, branding, and that's e-commerce.
Yes.
How is e-commerce changing the traditional formats of retail?
So I had a client who was a grocery retailer in Southeast Asia. And they were struggling to that. There were new entrants in the market, especially for a lot of your non-food items. All of those have now shifted towards e-commerce. So the question to them was, how do you bring a customer back to the store? And why does a customer go back to the store? And the main elements are today, even me, I still like to buy my food and my vegetables and fruits, everything in the grocery store, because I like the look and feel. So does that mean as a grocery store, you need to start allocating a lot more space towards something that's experiential for the consumer? How do you bring them in? Maybe if you're a family member, do you incorporate sort of play zones in the store to really bring them back into the store?
Okay.
When it comes to even apparel retail, how do you incorporate technology? So for example, you have smart mirrors that are starting to come up in stores where you don't have to go to a changing room.
Mm-hmm.
You can actually see right away in the mirror and flick through, okay, this shirt looks good for me, this doesn't. If you can then incorporate what's in your wardrobe and start to recommend, these are the sort of clothes that that'll work for you, you're creating this new experience. And I like to think millennials are all about experiences these days rather than possessions. right? It's how do you create that experience in store to really bring them back and then offer that sort of online, offline experience for them.
And yet, you know, I was reading somewhere that Amazon, which is this 800 pound gorilla, has started to build some brick and mortar stores.
And it makes sense because...
Because they want touch and feel.
Exactly. So you build the credibility in store.
Yeah.
You build the... I believe it's more for their food and vegetable, especially with them acquiring Whole Foods as well. Mm. They're building that credibility such that once a customer trusts them offline, they can start to order a lot more other things online as well. And again, it's that balance between offline and on offline that I see happening.
Very interesting. So, Nikhil, let's move to your entrepreneurial stint, which is Wonder Learning.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about this venture.
Yeah, a lot of it arose, both in consulting as well as during the MBA, where I realized many people that are entering the workforce, as well as people who are looking to transition to new jobs, don't have the requisite digital skills. Education today really focuses on subject-based learning, but rarely focuses on productivity tools. So when you think about doing simple analytical tools like Excel, Tableau, PowerPoint, to even how do you run a digital marketing campaign, how do you use Google Ads, Facebook Ads, how do you build a website? These things aren't really taught today.
Correct.
And we looked at how are different solutions out there. There's a lot of online learning solutions, but we realized that's very ineffective for somebody that wants to start from scratch. It's good to learn niche things. So say I want to do this particular thing on Excel, and it's great to learn. But it's very ineffective if you're starting to scratch because you don't know if you're learning the right thing. You don't have a coach to actually consult. And then on the other hand, you have a lot of offline learning tools, but they're costing £500,000 to £2,000, where it's more focused towards B2B2C. So companies will sell their employees, do this course, get credited, come back, and then say that you have this accreditation. Okay. So how do you really focus on that B2C market,
okay,
make it affordable? And that's what our whole problem statement is about. And the way we're solving this is you don't need an expert in the industry who's been teaching for 15, 20 years. You can actually take a master's, PhD student, or an early young working adult to teach it.
Okay.
As long as you provide them with the right content, it's very interactive, very personalized. Keep the group sizes small,
yeah,
and offer these classes either both in a live setting or in terms of an online live setting. But everything is live. That's the key critical thing.
Okay. Which means that people come online and you teach. Online.
Exactly. And so you have a forum to ask your questions in a closed setting that people are comfortable in. People get the confidence that they're learning the right materials because we try to relate everything to a real world problem. Mm. So for example, with Tableau, which is a data analytical tool, a data visualization tool, we try to relate it to assume that you're in sales, you've been given data for the last 3 years for an office supplies company, and you need to answer these top five questions. On Excel, it would have taken you 2-3 days to do this. We'll teach you in an hour and a half how to visualize the data and generate insights through a hypothesis-based thinking. Mm. And so we're really just trying to change the way in terms of how learning is done. It's not just feature A, feature B, feature C, feature D. No, it's we learn for an objective. We learn for an outcome. And then once you understand that outcome, then I think learning any tool is quite easy. But be very specific in what you want to learn and what's the applicability towards it.
Wow. Wow, that's quite amazing. So a question for you, which I ask a lot of startup entrepreneurs like you, should you have a partner or a co-founder or should you go solo?
I 100% believe you need a partner.
Your partner.
I've been blessed to have an amazing co-founder who's actually also my brother-in-law. Mm-hmm. And it's important to choose the right partner as well. We're very open with each other, very honest, but you have a sounding board to constantly test your ideas, test your thinking. Otherwise, you tend to get worked up in your own mind in terms of, oh, is this the right thing to do? Having a co-founder gives you the assurance, gives you the ability to also really deep dive into the nitty-gritty and test your hypotheses, test your thinking out with a sounding board. And it's been really important. It's just finding the right partner where you can be open and honest. I've seen people in the MBA who've chosen partners, but they can't be honest with each other and tell them, hey, I don't think this actually can work because of ABC. They'll try to cushion the way of thinking. And I think this is where you have to be straightforward. You have to be open and just be brutally honest.
Yeah.
If you can't, then I think you need to rethink who your co-founder
the relationship.
Yeah.
So again, based on your experience, you know, I'm sure you've had a lot of knowledge from people who you've seen starting up different companies based on your own learning as a startup. What, in your opinion, are some of the basic mistakes a lot of startup entrepreneurs make?
I'm definitely victim to this. Or Wonder Learning is definitely been victim to this.
Okay.
I would say one of the biggest, a couple of mistakes. I would say one is going too wide. One example is around Wonder Learning. We first started off, instead of just focusing on digital career skills, we were said, why is it so costly to learn any skill? If you want to learn the piano, if you want to learn the flute, if you want to learn cooking, if you want to have a gym trainer. In the UK, it costs almost £50 to £70 for any of this. So we said, okay, peer-to-peer learning can happen, not just in digital career skills, but for everything.
Yeah.
And so when we started, we offered everything on course. But then we realized we can't market anything. Who is our actual customer? We can't say our customer is everybody. Because when we start to do our marketing, start to reach out to consumers, we also didn't have any sort of tagline or anything to associate us with. Again, it goes back to what is your brand and why do people come back to you?
Correct.
And so we realized we struggled with that. So we got really good advice at one point that said, don't even just focus on career skills, just focus on maybe analytical tools and see are people willing to buy your product. So that's one learning, is not going too wide. First start small, do that really well and expand really well with that, and then start to offer other courses or other types of subjects.
Okay.
I would say the second one is more on outsourcing versus keeping it in-house and what is critical to your business. We first got somebody to help build our website, and that relationship ended up turning quite sour.
Okay.
Because as much as our developer said he could do all the things we wanted him to do, and we were quite clear with the user stories that we had asked him in terms of developing the website. But he took on too much. He kept delaying. When the delivery day was meant to be September, it was still end November. And we realized that both my co-founder and I, we said, sometimes take the hard call, and we let the developer go. But then within 48 hours, we used tools like Squarespace and WordPress, developed a website that was much better in terms of functionality because we integrated with Zoom, integrated with Skype, Zoom, Stripe, as well as a scheduling tool, where we actually automated a lot more than what we thought we could even do.
Wow.
And so I think there's that balance between what you outsource versus keep in-house. And given scheduling, given payments are all critical to the business, I'd say that's the second learning, as to determining what can you outsource. So things maybe like admin, legal, those can be outsourced. But critical to the business, you keep in-house and you do yourself.
And my last question to you for Wonder Learning before I move to the next segment. How have you funded your startup?
So being a student, it's obviously you're cash strapped. But I think that also helped us to really bootstrap the business. We're of the opinion that test very early, test your product, even though if it's 20-30% ready, get your customers to pay for that product.
Yeah.
And so in our testing phase, we ended up getting about 100-150 customers, all paying customers. And we use that to help develop our developers and our ongoing costs and our marketing as well.
Yeah.
And so that, I'm a big believer as well, is we didn't ask for any outside funding. We didn't use any of our personal money. We use our customers' money to reinvest into the business and then keep learning from that and keep tweaking it. Just get that out early. And yes, I think now we're probably at a point where we may look for funding to really ramp up our marketing. But bootstrapping helped us to A, really focus and tweak our business model to see what works and what doesn't. And once we're ready to say, okay, now we want to really increase from 1,000 customers to 10,000 customers, that's when we think funding is super important.
So Nikhil, moving on, you know, you love adventure sports.
Yes.
And, you know, you've done all kinds of things from scuba diving to
backpacking,
and when you jump out of an aircraft, what do you call
it?
Skydiving.
Yeah.
And so on. Tell me first, what has attracted you to such intense adventure sports?
So I would say I'm an adrenaline junkie. Mm-hmm. As you can tell with me moving around every 3 years in different countries, I don't like sitting still, I like being active, and I get a huge kick out of it. It allows me to, I think a good example is scuba diving. Scuba diving is almost meditative in a sense, because you completely disconnect from the rest of the world. There's no gadgets, there's nothing. It's just you, the water, you hear your breathing, and it's a whole new world out there. And that just keeps me going. I always think about, even when I'm working, what's my next holiday? What's my next plan? Because I look forward to these things. And I feel like if you're not looking forward to something, what's driving you and what keeps you going? And that's a big driver for me.
And you know, you got yourself certified in scuba diving.
Yes.
Where did you get yourself certified?
I got it in Central America, actually. Okay. So I told BCG that I wanted to take 6 to 9 months off after graduating to just backpack, travel by myself. I went for 3 months in Central America. So I started in Guatemala and went towards Panama. And throughout that backpacking experience, somebody actually introduced me to the idea of scuba diving and said Honduras has one of the best places, not Tegucigalpa, which is probably the highest murder capital in the world, but into the islands towards the north of Honduras. And I just spent a week and a half there. I was meant to go there for 2 days. I loved it. I decided to, after trying it once, get my scuba diving license, both beginners and advanced. And I never look back. And at least once every 2-3 years, I like to go on a 1 week scuba diving trek. The last one was in the Komodo Islands. So if you haven't been, I highly, highly recommend.
I haven't. I have not been to Komodo.
It's beautiful.
Wonderful. And which one of these is your favorite sports?
Right now, I would say scuba diving.
Scuba diving.
It really just allows me to, again, reflect, just to get, you kind of come up after your scuba diving in a very relaxed meditative state. As if you have done meditation for about 30, 45 minutes, because you just hear your breathing, you see very different things than what you would see on the opposite side of the world.
And of course, you live in Singapore, so therefore there are many opportunities to dive in all of
Southeast
Asia.
Exactly.
So let me move on and ask you a few questions personally. In your life, have you had any people who had a strong influence on you? And if yes, what have you learned from them?
I'd say my strongest influence would be my dad. And I don't think I realized this until after he passed away and in my early years as working. He would say simple things just growing up, you know, read the news, be well versed with it so that you can have a conversation, comb your hair, you need to look presentable, small things like this, even in terms of the workplace, what it means to be having a presence, what it means to talk with clarity, all these small lessons, which at the time I would say, Dad, stop giving me lectures,
give me a break,
stop constantly trying to tell me what to do, how to do it. But then I reflect back, and I keep thinking, he was right. He was always right. He was always right with the way he kept telling me about what to do, how to think about it. But I think the key was that he wasn't ever prescriptive. He never said, do this, you have to do it. He made me really reflect and think about what it means to focus. And to focus on not only just your family, but your business, to have clarity in terms of your thought. And I keep thinking about what would Dad have done in a certain situation, and that also helps me answer a lot of problems and dilemmas I have in life.
And he was also much into sports, because I think you climbed Kilimanjaro.
He did Kilimanjaro as well. He was an avid runner. He used to gym. He actually got me into gymming in when we were young, 11 or 12. He actually put a pull-up bar in our back garden, and he would wake us up at 5:30 in the morning. He'd teach us it's so important to be fit. Because your health is everything, right? It's super important to incorporate fitness, not just as a routine, but as a lifestyle.
Very interesting. So my next question is that what would be 3 words that define Nikhil?
An interesting question. I try to ask other people as well before this, just to see what their perspective as well is. For me, I would say I'm very optimistic. I'm a guy who looks half glass full.
Correct.
At any situation. On simple things, when problems go wrong, I try to bring the best out of people. And just be optimistic in scenarios. Look, there are a lot of things that are in your control. There are a lot of things that are not in your control. And I try to look at it from that point of view as to if it's controllable, what can you change? If it's not controllable, what can you do differently from this perspective? The second thing I would say is I'm a big people's person. I get along with people very easily. I have friends all over the world and I connect with them very easily. And I would say that perspective and that open-mindedness, I would say, helps a lot. And I think it helps even in consulting. It helps with starting my own business because you're constantly meeting new people and just being able to be warm, comfortable, open, but also just listen to them and listen and hear their perspective. Okay. I think that I've been taught throughout moving different countries, just how to do this and really build up that strength.
Okay.
And then I would say that the third one is I'm data driven. Mm-hmm. I like data. I like it may sort of be a bit too much, but I need data to really drive my answers and give an opinion on something. So I need to read a lot. I need to hear different opinions to then form an opinion and say, no, this is what I believe in.
Okay.
But when I believe in something, then I will go for it.
So Nikhil, I have time for two more questions for you. Tell me, what is the most outrageous thing that you have done? And do you look back at it with pleasure or regret?
I would say the most outrageous goes back a bit to backpacking. Mm-hmm. I was 21 at the time, just graduated from undergrad. And I've always had in the back of my mind that I want to experience what it's like to just travel by yourself, expose yourself to a country where you don't know the language. And Central America is a country where I knew very little Spanish, but I wanted to live in a house for 1.5 months in a Guatemalan home and see what it's like to just take yourself outside of a comfort zone. So I lived with a mother there, very basic living. I've been very lucky and privileged to have had all the comforts. And I just wanted to know what that feels like, to give me perspective.
Okay.
And it truly was an eye-opening experience for me. I think it taught me as well that it's so easy to be happy. It's easy to get caught up in all the big things around you. Mm-hmm. But I saw just people are so happy with the basic things around them. I saw this mother, I saw her child out there. And they're such happy, genuine people.
Wonderful.
And that just brought me back to reality. And I definitely don't have any regrets. I was very scared, obviously, going there in terms of what am I doing? Why am I doing this? But I look back and I always think about that specific moment. And that just grounds me back to reality to say, hey, appreciate what you have. Appreciate what's around you. And also just don't forget that it's also important to give back. And I think that always just is my reality check that I like to put on myself. So definitely no regrets.
Wonderful. So my last question to you, that if you had to tattoo on your arm a message to yourself, what would it be?
So my dad always used to joke with us about there being four Fs. It's fun. Always have fun in your life. Always be fit. Always prioritize your family, because family comes first and they are your rock.
Mm-hmm.
And always maintain your friendships.
Wonderful.
And I would do something along those lines and get it out of. But that's how I want to live my life and believe that as long as you're having fun, you're fit, and your friends and family are around you, then you can solve any problems, you can do whatever you want, and you'll always be happy.
Those are very, very wise words. Even though from your dad, but coming from you at your age, that's fantastic. Nikhil, thank you very much.
No,
it's such a pleasure
speaking.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for the Brand Called You. Thank you and see you next week.